It's nostalgia that gets you in the end.
Yes, I would say nostalgia can be detrimental sometimes.
Painful.
Yes.
You might say.
Yes. Wasn't that part of the meaning?
The word literally refers to the pain. Algia, of course, meaning pain or discomfort. And the nost part, it's Greek for returning home.
Mm.
So it's the pain of returning home.
I feel like most of the things that I'm nostalgic
like
about,
every Thanksgiving.
Though,
sorry,
like,
I didn't wait for the joke.
Oh, wow. Sorry, I'm sorry. I feel like most of the things I'm nostalgic about, I think of fondly, and it makes me happy to think about it.
And so far,
it's such a strange word.
In our exploration of films that were remembered, perhaps not wistfully, well, even.
Right.
We've been pretty lucky so far. Not a lot of bricks caught.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so sure that we were so lucky this time around. Can you think of anything in particular that you have been nostalgic for and you've returned to and went, ooh, boy.
Ooh, that's a tough question.
You have a lot of old DVDs on your shelf. Bought, I'm sure, during those wild, halcyon college years.
Oh, please.
When everything was great.
Well, some of them don't age very well.
You've referenced The Net many times on this show.
I was going to say The Net again because it does not stand the test of time. Like stuff that was cutting edge then and like, oh my gosh, we're in chat rooms and everybody has their screen names and everything.
Right.
It's like, yeah, we've advanced further than this now and it's just, it doesn't really stand up.
I'm a little fuzzy. Was it set in the future or was it supposed to be set like present day?
I'm pretty sure it was supposed to be present day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. For the present day of 1994, 1995.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've come a long way since
then. We've got mail.
Exactly.
No, don't open it!
No! I can think of something I was nostalgic about and was happy when I returned to it. Like, Sailor Moon. Like, I've always had a fondness for Sailor Moon, and I rewatched some episodes a little while ago, and I was like, this is really funny. This is really good. I understand why I like this. So
yeah, but then there's a need to sort of rework it, like they've remastered it and they're going to make new episodes
and
almost
not
like
everybody
it wasn't good enough the first time.
Well, not everybody is really happy with that. So it's complicated because like the manga is very different from the anime, and the manga is really 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 good. For the anime, I don't think that the creator, they let her be as involved as she necessarily wanted to be.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of filler episodes, and it's kind of like Power Rangers, except all magical girls, fighting the bad guys.
Yeah.
And
it's a Sentai show. They just don't combine to make a big robot or something.
Right, exactly. And it's there are some episodes that just read like fillers. Like, you're not getting any the long-standing story,
but that's I'm not sure what the release schedule was for Sailor Moon, but that's just Japanese like TV,
I suppose,
because a lot of it is serial, a lot of it is constant. I mean, if you look at, I'm sure there's plenty of Scooby-Doo episodes that are just like, okay, yeah, they're just,
oh, don't even get me started on Scooby-Doo.
Doing it again.
Speaking of Scooby-Doo,
oh, I don't think we were, but go ahead.
When I was in New Orleans, there was like a Scooby-Doo movie on. Happened to start watching it, and it was like just Scooby-Doo, Shaggy, and Scrappy-Doo. Remember Scrappy-Doo?
We all do.
Yep. And
pretty painful.
Yep. And they were also working with this group of brothers who were ghosts. How in the world does that make sense?
Was this
when
like
Shaggy
the new adventures of?
I think so.
Scrappy-Doo?
It was like a movie though, because it was going on forever.
Well, yeah, he totally Urkeled that thing. So
yeah.
Okay. Well.
Or Stefan'd it, however you want
to. Oh, you think that's the straw that broke the Winslow's back?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't want to out myself about anything in particular. A movie we're going to talk about today would be on that list. Here's a good one, actually, from a previous experience on the show, Equilibrium. I remember being, if not impressed, engrossed by that and kind of drawn in.
Right.
And I never really thought Kurt Vimmer was going to be the new Scorsese, but I thought, oh, this is okay. This seems like a good thing. And then we watched it for the show a little while ago, and it was like, all right, this is not good. But it's bad enough that I do think it kind of goes over into enjoyable bad. Like, I can enjoy this.
I feel like it's enjoyable.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that you just remember wrongly.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed you didn't say Empire Records. I feel like that's always going to hold a special place for you.
Yes, it does. Although, but it's, I mean, I have to say, though, I did not like the version that we watched with all the extra scenes.
Oh, yes. That ruined everything. It's just more Rex Manning. I don't know what you want.
Not more Rex Manning.
I guess it doesn't make you happy.
No.
Well, we are slightly unhappy, but we hope to make you happy, listeners, on the Just Enough Trope podcast. I'm your host, Caliban, joined as always by my co-host.
Hi, I'm Mikan Hanna.
And it's the Monday. It's the Monday. It's beginning of the week. Articles out of place. And, of course, we're here to talk craft services today. Movies that are remembered fondly, but handled poorly mm-hmm. by critics. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we get good ones, and sometimes we get not so good ones.
Yep.
And I think we might be in the second category for today.
Yep.
As announced before, we watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer from 1992, the original incarnation of Joss Whedon's vision of a cheerleader slash slayer that mm-hmm. takes out vampires in her high school and beyond.
Yep.
And it's a fun movie, right? It stars Donald Sutherland and Luke Perry. Rutger Hauer and Paul Rubens, a.k.a. Pee Wee Herman, are in it. And there's a lot going on. And we'll talk about that later. I don't give it away now. I'm going to give it away.
There's a lot of people in this.
Yeah, there is.
You know,
we'll
it's
get to
actually,
it.
I know.
Save it.
I'm saving it.
We'll get to it. Also, we'll do a couple reviews today. I want to talk about the new release, Titanfall 2, on Xbox, PS4, and PC. It is, I'm trying to think of how to describe it. It's like a Call of Duty with giant robots, sort of.
Sure.
The first game came out a couple years ago and was pretty successful, and this is the big sort of sequel to that. And it's kind of EA's big opportunity to try to get in on the market here. They have Battlefield 1, which is a big thing, and of course this as well, both released on discs and also on their Origin service, competing against Call of Duty, of course, which is sort of the big competitor game. And I'll be talking about whether it was fun going back to the Titans. Remember them. Because they're back. And I
have to remember them.
Talk about a couple comic books today, too.
Yeah.
Some things that you picked up on your sojourn in New Orleans. Some interesting stuff. This is not Big Two stuff? Big Two stuff.
No.
I guess the eye is kind of the big
Image is like
third.
The big three. I picked up Romulus number one, story by Brian Hill. Art by Nelson Blake II. It's fancy.
Not Junior, II.
II. well, maybe it wasn't his dad. I don't know.
Esquire.
And also Black Mask, that's right, comic, Jade Street Protection Services.
Jade Street Protection Services?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, of course. The JSPS.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know them.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, that one is a lot of fun. Romulus is pretty dark, but we'll get to that later.
Sure. And just to cover all the bases, we have a Boom Studios comic as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Big Trouble in Little China meets Escape from New York book. And it's by Greg Pak. And we got a couple things to say about it. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Cal. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I am still trying to wrestle with my perceptions of certain things.
Okay.
And just, as nerds, we have so many opportunities to enjoy things, to feel good about things. You mentioned Sailor Moon, and back when you were watching Sailor Moon, or when I was watching Dragon Ball Z off of bootleg tapes.
Right.
That a friend of mine got from a friend of his who knew a guy in Japan.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of the only game in town. That or grainy, snowed copy of Akira or something like that.
Sure.
The original English dub. And so you think about those things fondly. Now, with a click of your hand or a flick of your wrist, you can watch God knows how many anime, old and new.
Very true.
And so it's tempting to look back at those things and feel like, oh, those are such the greats.
Right.
When, of course, we've refined the art. Of course we have. I mean, there are a lot of great movies that come from older times. Like mm-hmm. Casablanca remains to this day probably a perfect movie. Like in terms of structure, in terms of characterization, in terms of acting and the setting.
Right.
And the composition and the camera work and lighting and all that stuff. Like very few missteps, if any. It's just enshrined as something really amazing. But we've taken all those steps and we've made even new stuff. And you can't say just categorically that everything that comes out today is crap compared to the old stuff.
No, you can't.
But sometimes you go back to the old stuff and it's not as good as you thought.
That is true.
And for people who really care about stuff like us, like nerds do, yeah, that's a particularly that puts the alga in the nostalgia.
Because
most people see a film, they enjoy it, they don't, they move on with their lives. Or most people I know who I wouldn't consider nerds, I love them still, they see a movie, they're like, it's okay. Well, yeah, but like, what'd you think about it? It's like, it was pretty good.
They don't really have a whole lot to say.
Yeah, but like, was there like a good part or was like a slow part? Yeah, I think I'll look at it and watch a couple times. It was pretty good. If I look at my watch once in a film, it's bad news.
There's something wrong.
Yeah. I might not even have stayed in that film.
Mm-hmm.
I might be looking at my watch in the lobby. Like,
I know, right?
How to get an Uber back home. So, I don't know. That's been on my mind. I've been trying to be not negative about things or overly negative. Negative enough to be critical.
Sure.
Clearly, because that's why we're here. But, I don't know. Do you have an opinion about that? That's pretty good.
Stop.
That's a joke. I'm sorry. I was looking at my watch.
I understand what you're saying, and there are things like that, like that you were like, wow, what was I thinking? this isn't movies per se, but I watched a lot of really bad TV. Well, I've watched a lot of really bad movies too before I really came into developing my being critical of filmed. Filmed acting. Before I really became critical of TV shows and movies and the like, and I look back and I'm like, yeah, I watched a lot of crap, and I don't know why. I don't have a good reason for
it. Yeah, but you can't beat yourself up over that. We all have.
No, but you feel a little shame. You do. You're like, wow, I wasted all that time.
Yeah.
Like, why did I sit and watch that movie? One of my sisters, and I love her to death, but she has horrible tastes in film.
I don't think it's horrible. She just has an expansive taste.
She watches just about anything. Just about anything.
Right.
Let me put it this way. It's not very discerning.
Well, it doesn't mean that she certainly has favorites still.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is true. But she owns some real stinkers.
Well, okay. The owning part, for me, is I'll watch anything.
Okay.
Once.
Fair.
I'll watch
Fair.
A bad movie. Movies can't push me to the point where I'm like, okay, movie, you've broken the agreement here that you're going to entertain me, and so I'm not going to finish you. But, yeah, I mean, I watch anything once, but then spending money to purchase and acquire said movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she owns Where the Heart Is, for example.
Okay, there's got to be something good about that film.
It's really terrible.
That's the Natalie Portman... Ashley Judd one?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Susan Sarandon in that, good. Or is that a different one?
That's a different Natalie Portman.
That's a different Natalie Portman one.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, I know my Natalie Portman movies. I'll tell you that much.
We know where you're coming from.
I don't know if she does, but...
I don't know. Wow. 35% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, well...
I don't want to watch it,
Yeah, we're not watching that one. Is she like a... fight ninjas, or is she like a own a comic book store or something like that?
Nope.
Okay. All right, well, then we don't have to watch it.
Exactly.
Not
There's
nerdy
nothing
enough.
Nerdy whatsoever.
Joss Whedon didn't write it, did he?
I don't think so.
Good.
I'm pretty sure he did not.
Good.
Yeah.
That would explain why Susan Sarandon's head gets torn off in the third act.
Wow.
Just out of nowhere.
Stop. He does like killing characters, that Joss.
Yeah, he does. A few more people could have died in the movie that we watched.
Yeah.
In my opinion. We'll get to that. But after the news, which is right now. So I'm still waiting for a story to really rock the nerd world. I can't really think of any. Well, all the things that we get are little updates on things that we've already kind of been watching.
Sure.
And I'm happy to report those just as anything else. But there are two stories I can think of that are fairly serious right now.
Okay.
And I think we've talked about one of them previously, the fact that Brian Fuller is stepping away from being showrunner of Star Trek Discovery.
We definitely talked about that.
And that's kind of ongoing. We're still kind of dealing with that. He's involved, although at this point, I mean, how much involved do you think he really is?
Right.
Especially when you can be a producer on a project and really not do anything. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can be an executive. Wait a minute. I bet it's the other way around.
I don't know.
Producer means you're actually like doing the work and calling people.
There and on set.
Executive producer means that you're just
bankrolling.
Having my name is more beneficial to you than me doing anything and for you.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
But I think didn't he write the first couple of episodes, I think?
I don't know if his specific name is going to be on them, but he was certainly instrumental in developing them.
I know their team is...
Nostalgia.
What?
Pain. Sorry. Yeah,
that's okay. I know that the rest of the creative team is... they're still moving forward with his initial ideas and...
Yep.
I know. That's about all they can say. That's about all I can say.
Pain. It's going to be a show of pain. Boy. What would that be?
Are we gonna wish?
Show-alga?
I don't know.
Pot-alga. Got it.
That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Do you think we're going to regret that there is another Star Trek show once this thing actually comes out?
So everybody regretted that not Tobey Maguire, the other one, Andrew Garfield, Spider-Man movie number one.
Yes.
Not that great. Mm-hmm. Second one, even worse. And... we were all like, oh, fantastic. And then, oh, they're going to reboot it again. Now everybody's super excited. Now, of course, this is a check that's not cashed yet. It could bounce, but everybody thinks that it's going to be pretty good. And we got a shot at this. Mm-hmm. If this falls apart, which I think it's even odds at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll happen because it's all paid for. It's all...
Right.
They've got to launch this stupid service that is going to be horrible to watch it on. And like, so if this crashes and burns, which looks like even money, there'll be another shot.
Okay.
Don't you think?
And they'll learn from...
Well, we're trying to stay positive in the face of these horrible things we're faced with.
I know.
Let me give you my stupid news.
Okay.
So anyway, the Hollywood Reporter reports, these are rumors, that the cast is going to feature... we already know there will be an openly gay character.
Right.
Which will be played by a gay actor. Okay. They've made that really clear, which I think that's been a thing recently. I think that's important.
Sure.
Although I still think that actors can play... things they're not. It's called being an actor. But
yeah.
There'll be a female admiral character. There'll be a male Klingon captain character, a male admiral character, a male advisor. These are getting real vague.
These are very male.
And then a British male doctor. I hope it's an actual British person.
Yeah, me too.
And not somebody, because that's not how acting works.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of interested in the fact that, first of all, there's two admirals in that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming they won't be on the ship or whatever.
I'm assuming.
And then the fact that there will be a Klingon captain.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know if that is an adversary to the crew.
Or the captain of the crew. Right.
It'd be very unlikely that it would be the captain of the Discovery. But there have been fan theories that even though this takes place like before even the original series, so tensions with the Klingons should be high.
Really high.
People have sort of speculated the mission of the Discovery might be some kind of like joint cultural mission in order to foster cooperation between.
I see.
Which leads people to speculate as to why the Discovery looks the way it does. Because it has a saucer section like ships of that era, but then it has the triangular body, which is almost, and then the sort of like nacelles with like the red thing. It's very like Klingon cruiser-esque.
Hmm.
And so people think, like, is this some kind of, like, amalgamation, like a technological cooperation between the two races?
Maybe it is.
I got to tell you, that sounds pretty stupid. I don't know why they're terrified. I don't know why they're so scared to just continue the story. Just keep going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Data blows up at the end of Nemesis. Sorry, everyone. You don't necessarily have to follow Star Trek Online because it's set very far in the future, like 80 years after the show. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. Why are you terrified? Look at J.J. Abrams and crew had the courage to deliver an okay movie that takes place after Return of the Jedi.
Right.
And they had the balls to just say, look, I'm sorry. I know you guys love the books. We can't be tied by that. We have to tell the story. We got to go forward. And I wish they would do that with Star Trek. Now, yes, it's an anthology show. It's speculated that if there is a second season, they can jump around. They could do that. They could tell a story later on. But the farther back you go and the more you try to stick in, the tougher it's going to be. You can't just make stuff up whole cloth. You can't create a Kylo Ren or a Snoke or whatever. You have to go with, well, okay, so where's Zefram Cochrane at right now?
Is he
hanging out on Earth or is he at Alpha Centauri? And I think the problem comes with, I don't think they really care. And I don't think they should necessarily be slaves to continuity, but you can't do things. Even Enterprise, which did a lot of things before the original series was set. In fact, set before this.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty careful too. When they changed things, they just took things that were underdeveloped and sort of developed their own thing.
Sure.
And sometimes that might have got him in trouble with something or another. Like I was talking to Greg Cox, Star Trek author, who's written a bunch of books about Khan. And it's all based on what we know about Khan,
sure,
movies, and just other books and speculation and stuff like that. And then they come in and they set all the stuff up with Soong and his augments in Enterprise. And it kind of still kind of works. But he told me he was watching them sometimes like, ooh.
With like bated breath.
Yeah, he's like, I don't know if we can square that. I don't know if that's gonna work. And yeah, to create, you can't be shackled by that kind of thing. But what are you creating something for? You're creating it for nerds, and that's half of the fun for us.
The continuity.
Yeah.
And like seeing how all the pieces fit together.
Yeah. So I really do think that they're just gonna do their own thing, and if it matches, great. And if it doesn't, they'll just go, nah. You guys understand different timelines and stuff, right?
But it's supposed to be part of the main timeline, so...
Okay, you're creating a show
with
a rabid fan base who have already been disappointed by three blockbuster movies, or at least their connection to the canon and the characters they love. What are you going to tell them at a press conference?
Yeah, but shouldn't you...
I'm not going to say that you lied, but maybe you bent the truth a little?
Yeah, that's not great.
Because the first episode, the Discovery could take off, fly through a wormhole or something, and be in a totally different timeline or universe or whatever, and then they can do whatever they want. In fact, they probably should do that.
Mm.
You know, they might discover another galaxy. Like, they might fly through a wormhole and end up somewhere completely not even in the Alpha Quadrant. Which, actually, that might be kind of cool.
It might work.
I mean, it's supposed to be, that's like what Voyager was supposed to be.
Right.
How that turned out, but... People turn off when we talk about Star Trek. So let's move on to the next show. This is a continuation of a disappointing story that is actually becoming somewhat more heartwarming.
Yeah.
Nostalgic? No.
Okay.
We had talked about how Chelsea Kane had quit Twitter over harassment over her work on Mockingbird, the Mockingbird series at Marvel, which is, you know, canceled. I mean, it's already going to come to a close.
It was already planned to.
But it's been collected in volumes and being sold on Amazon.
Sure.
Like all comics are these days. And the sales of the first volume, Volume 1, I Can Explain, is the title, is on top of the Marvel graphic novel list right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Kindle version of that collection is at number 3. And the pre-orders for the second volume of Mockingbird, My Famous Agenda, are at the number 5 spot in terms of sales.
Well, so... this story, whether you like it or not, is garnered some sales for them. That's
yes, it good. Has. Sales and support.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's a positive thing to come out of this.
It is a positive thing, although there are still roadblocks.
Of course there are.
Chelsea Kane was, as we reported last show, was tweeting about the hate that she was getting and how she can't believe that the comics world is like this. She'd never experienced this in any other form of books or whatever. And Brian Bendis tweeted at her, replied, it's not comics.
Okay.
And she tweeted back, yeah, it is.
Okay.
And the full tweet was something to the effect of, you know, we can talk about this later in person, but yeah, I'm telling you, it is.
Huh.
So.
Okay, it's a little uncomfortable.
Brian Michael Bendisplainer.
Wow.
I mean,
maybe he was trying to say, like, not all comics, like, not all men or whatever, but that's not great either.
Hashtag not all comics.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a problem, especially when he is essentially the biggest guy at Marvel, or at least one of them. And the fact that he feels the need, all he had to do, be diplomatic. All he had to do was just not say anything. And he felt the need to
say something.
Yeah. And nobody would say that he is... part of the problem.
No, I wouldn't say that at all. But I'm
when
sure
a guy like him, who's a friend of this person and is not part of the problem, still feels the need to defend this thing and basically to deny the problem. That's the problem.
Yes,
we found
You're
the problem.
Not helping.
No,
and
from the top down, nobody seems to want to deal with this.
Well, and I'm sure her experiences are very different from his experiences. But
I'm sure that he's soaked up his share of abuse.
You think so?
I may have sent some of it.
Stop.
But I bet it wasn't... Nobody has ever threatened to rape him.
No. I'm sure they haven't.
Even over the monkey issue of Powers.
Wow.
Forget about that. Not talking about that. Let's talk about some new good news, some happy news.
Okay.
Doctor Strange has debuted to $86 million internationally.
Oh, wow.
It's out overseas. I still don't know why they do this.
Yeah, why
it's out
they do
overseas.
That?
And it made $86 million, which is impressive.
That is impressive.
You know, the take's going to be less than it is in the U.S. usually. But even if that was its U.S. opening weekend,
it's pretty good.
Yeah. You'd be set right there.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a big, big late October or early November opening.
Yep. It's opening in the U.S. later this week.
Yeah. Yes, of course. It's opening the end of this week on Friday.
Yeah.
And on Friday's show, we'll have a review of the film for you because we're seeing it early.
Sweet.
It's part of the perks of the job.
Excited.
And we're also reading a comic book for Comic Book Club. We're reading Marvel Premiere issues 9 through 14, which features Doctor Strange stuff. So check that out, too. It is huge. It's 50% ahead of where Ant-Man was.
Wow.
In its opening. It's 37% ahead of Guardians. And it's 23% ahead of The Winter Soldier. So this is one of, if not the biggest, international Marvel movie so far. Who knew the Chinese loved Doctor Strange? Oh, is it even opening in China?
Well, God, I hope so.
It opened in Hong Kong. I know that for sure. As far as like wide China, I don't know.
Sure.
Do they have like just multiplexes in like Yangzhou?
I have no idea. I don't know the answer to
China's
the question.
China's so modern these days. It's
they
so silly
are,
to even make this joke, but
they're huge. You know, China is huge.
Take your oxen down to the, you know, tie them up to the thing.
Stop it.
Right. No, they've got theaters, but
of course they do.
I'm surprised. Did anybody tell Chinese authorities what the film's about? Because they hear Ghostbusters. I don't think so. No, thank you. Or that, or they're just big Bill Murray fans. And then Doctor Strange, fine.
I have no idea.
He's the master
know why
of the mystic
arbitrary.
Arts.
I know.
Black magic.
Yeah. I don't. They have a problem with ghosts. I don't understand why they didn't want Ghostbusters.
He's got ghosts that live in his basement. Come on.
Stop.
He loves ghosts. Yeah, I don't know. But it's doing good. That's a good sign for here, I think. Early reviews have it pegged at being pretty good.
Okay.
It's not going to influence us. We're going to be real honest and give you our opinion.
That's right.
On our next show. So join us then. Hey, James Gunn directed those four Stan Lee cameos that we were talking about.
Oh.
Stan Lee just did Boom Boom, like four cameos in a row.
Right.
James Gunn directed them all.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yep. I have to imagine that it was just a green screen.
Probably.
On Stan Lee's Davenport. Mm-hmm. And they had like a rack with some hats and a glittery vest.
Wow.
Or maybe
just
they
do
just
some quick costume
they
changes.
Just put a green barber smock on him and then they just throw whatever they want on him.
There you go. Like it's a
like he's a paper doll or something.
Stop.
Yeah.
Like he's in an Avengers film, so he's wearing an apron with all the characters on it or something like that.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Kiss the cook.
Yeah.
he supposedly these are going to be for Doctor Strange, Guardians of the Galaxy, Homecoming, and Thor Ragnarok.
Okay.
I mean, that's the only films that we know of in development, unless they're going to surprise us with something. So,
right.
Yeah. And there's no real other information on that. James Gunn has actually said that he was fun to work with.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
He's a ball buster.
I'm sure that's also true.
Like, because I guess he was on the set with Tom Holland, and he's like, everyone says you're great. Personally, I don't see it.
Are you freaking kidding me? And it's Tom Holland. How do you react to that?
He's young. We try not to disappoint him too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That's a little, that's kind of intimidating hearing that from Stan the Man. I don't know how I would feel.
Well, he was smiling when he said it,
though. I'm sure he was.
And so, yeah, he did do the Doctor Strange one as well, so.
All right. Cool. Yeah.
Written by Dan Harmon? Or just the tags written by Dan Harmon?
I don't know.
We still don't know what was written by Dan Harmon in that film. But I bet we'll be able to tell.
I think we will be. The film. Yeah.
So we'll let you know about that. Hey. Speaking of Marvel, the Defenders TV show will only be 8 episodes long.
Oh, okay. Why so short?
Well, I'll tell you why. do you want to be longer?
No.
Haven't all these shows been too long?
I feel really bad, too, because I haven't watched any more Luke Cage because I was
I probably got to get on that.
I probably need to plow through and hopefully they get better. But it's just it's hard when a show is disappointing off the bat. And I didn't want it to be.
Well, I think that that's essentially what is the motivation behind this. They just don't want it to drag on for too long. Plus, when you think about it, you've got, I mean,
probably would have
super
to
in demand, but you've got four different stars at least that you're going to have to bring back. I'm sure you'd have to bring back some of their villains if they're still alive or around.
Probably have to pay a lot more.
Yep. So, and so probably just to keep the costs down, even though Netflix definitely has pocket money to do that. But S.J. Clarkson, who's worked on Jessica Jones, also on Vinyl and Orange is the New Black, will be directing the first two episodes.
Okay.
And she's also serving as executive producer of the pilot.
All right.
So I don't know. I see a lot of cooks getting into this, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Because you've got the showrunners of each show specifically. They're all probably going to have to contribute ideas to the central show to keep it kind of running smooth and keep all the characters and stuff on point and make sure everybody's being used and stuff like that. And so how is that all going to come out in the wash?
I don't know.
It's one thing when you've got Stan Lee writing Iron Man, writing Spider-Man, writing Thor, and then also writing the Avengers.
Right.
Like he and Jack Kirby know what they want every character to do. But now you're taking four separate crews, basically, with four separate stars, four separate executive producers, four writers' rooms. How does that all go into one thing?
I have no idea.
Do you do it like baseball? Do you do all-star team?
Yeah, there you go.
We need like a, who's our quip guy? And we're like, Fred. Fred's the best quip guy. Get him in there. Who's the best director? SJ. You're
right,
up.
Right, right.
Who's the best caterer? Oh, Francine's got the good, she's got profiteroles. Yeah, okay, Francine. Come on.
That sounds about right. Yeah, let's say that might be better than getting four separate teams to try to work together.
That's what I would do.
Yeah.
If I had my choice. One last story that's near and dear to my heart. We're going to talk about video games in a little bit, but it turns out that somebody hacked the Hello Games Twitter account.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hello Games is the studio that released No Man's Sky.
Right.
And a lot of people aren't happy about No Man's Sky.
They were disappointed.
In terms of it being a good game.
Mm-hmm.
It was not. And so the Hello Games account tweeted out that the game was a mistake and it apologized for releasing the game.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. That's, I don't know, that's pretty bad.
A lot of people have condemned the game for its quote-unquote false promises. Sean Murray has taken the brunt of that as the head of the studio for basically promising a lot of stuff that was supposed to be in the game or that we would see in the game and that was never in the game.
Yeah.
And so it has received mixed reviews for that reason. I think the sales are still pretty good, though. I don't think they have anything to really worry about.
Do you think they'll end up like fixing some of the issues and like maybe like making No Man's Sky 2 or make it better somehow?
Possibly. I know that they're sort of adding and changing things a little bit, but there's only so much you can do once it's all done.
Right.
It's like a house. Like you can paint it once it's built.
Right.
But if you want to remodel.
I mean, you're going to have to take a wall down. If you take a wall down, you're going to have to move the plumbing. And exactly. Yeah.
And you can't really do that when a game is gold, essentially, when it's already in somebody's hands.
No.
So there's not much more to this story. I think Kotaku emailed Hello Games, and they're like, what's going on? And they emailed back, it's not a hack. It was a disgruntled employee that sent that.
What?
Which seems weird. But then later on, Sean Murray himself posted that we got hacked. And he thinks he's funny. So he said, we're binging Mr. Robot episodes as quickly as we can looking for answers.
Oh, my God.
And then later on, he's like, if anything was a mistake, it was using LinkedIn without two-factor authentication.
Whoa.
So even in describing what happened to you guys, you lied.
Yeah, what's really happening here?
Nobody knows.
Okay. Weird.
Lying liars and the lies they tell.
Yeah.
Should be the name of the Hello Games story.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of Hello Games right now. So
did I ever give my review?
I don't know if you did.
Oh, here it is.
My dreams, I've kissed your lips. thousand times. I sometimes see you pass outside my door. Hello, is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile.
All right, we got video games, we got comic books. All we're missing is snacks, unhealthy snacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a boy slumber party. It's not called slumber party. What do you call it?
Sleepover?
What? Yeah. I feel like even that's...
Wow. I don't know.
You call it losing track of time. You call it an all-night LAN party is what you call it. Ugh. You call it crunching the juice, extreme style. You notice that all these video games now, Battlefield included, Titanfall as well, they're all doing advertisements with like, oh, it's Rockstar Energy Monster Drink. Ah, smash it in your head.
Yeah.
Or like Buffalo Wild Wings has a Titanfall promotion right now.
That's really weird.
So you go to BWDub, B-Dubs.
Yeah.
Whatever their stupid sobriquet for themselves is.
Uh-huh.
And then you like, after you smash some Asian Zing garlic chicken wings, you get your code to get double points in Titanfall.
Wow. And you get like... Instead of like Cheeto dust all over your face, you get wing sauce and you get it all over your fingers.
Oh, I was just like in the game, like if you entered a code and then you're just like a giant, like a chicken walker. That's a type of mech.
So
you get like a chicken,
God.
But it's like, oh God.
No.
Shooting eggs at people. Yeah. wait for it. Save it. Let's talk about comic books. So you read two comic books.
I did.
A Black Mask book, which is interesting. I don't read a lot of Black Mask.
I don't either.
But tell us about the Black Mask book that you read.
Yeah, I've read Jade Street Protection Services. Basically from the creative team of Katie Rex, who I believe is the writer, and Fabian Lalay is the artist. Annie Wu did the first cover the series as well. It's a really cool cover.
What's it about?
It is about this all girls like magical school, and they have they have magical gems that are in certain weapons.
Uh-huh.
And they need to transform, and in order to transform they have to have the gems and the weapons, and they do this, and they're practicing, they're trying to hone their magic, basically, in school. And so they're in class, and one of the girls really has to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
Like, really, really bad.
Sure.
And she can't help, it's like her, she can't help it. Like, she doesn't have a really good control over her magic. This is what they're trying to learn, right?
Right.
So all of a sudden, there are toilets dropping all over.
Okay.
And their teacher is like really, really strict.
Sure.
And so she gives her detention. And eventually she gives like everybody detention for various reasons. And they're just kind of like,
Is it like a Professor X's Academy for magic mutants or something like that? Or is it like Harry Potter? Like, what are they training for?
We don't really get to that in the first issue. They allude to the fact that they don't get a lot of choice in what they do because they have a destiny and they can't really, they're one thing that's mentioned is that they are, as magical girls, they can't create anything with their own hands. Like they're not supposed to do like any art or anything like that, like knitting and stuff like that. Like
weird.
They're not supposed to do any of that. And they talk about daydreaming, about doing different things, but it's kind of alluded to like that's all, it's a waste of time because they're going to become these magical warriors or
it's weird
like
it
that.
Seems like there's, from just what you're saying, it seems like there's a real sort of they're special, clearly,
yes,
but they're also kind of prisoners. Like they're kind of held up as like, oh, you know, you're destined for something great, but they're all being controlled and their sort of gifts are being exploited. And...
Yes, that's very true.
Okay.
I would say.
You think it's significant that they're all girls too?
Yeah, I do. And Katie Rex, who is the writer of the book, did talk about how it's, you know, very heavily influenced by Sailor Moon. And I mean, you can tell like the transformations, that sort of thing.
Sure.
How's
the art?
I think the art is pretty cool. It's loose. I really like the cover art by Annie Wu. I think the rest of the art, I like it. I'm not sure if I love it, but it's very, very colorful. And
like an indie vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like the characters a lot, too.
Sure.
It's a very diverse group of kids. I like that. So the girl who...
The toilet girl?
The toilet girl. Yeah, she's very mischievous, and she loves doing pranks, and she happens to wear a headscarf. So I just think that that's really cool and against type. And the main girl is, she doesn't talk at all. She's very smart, but she doesn't talk, and she doesn't talk because she's autistic. And she does this tapping thing with her hands when she's nervous, but like she doesn't talk, but she can text, like that's okay. But I think that that's really cool that like they're just showing different girls and their different strengths and...
Just like Sailor Moon, they're all different.
Well,
very different. Different colored hair and everything else.
Yeah.
So would you recommend it ultimately?
Yeah, I would. I'm interested to see and where it goes. There's something that happens in the first book. They're kind of unraveling a mystery they stumble upon. So it seems like there's more going on than meets the eye.
Okay. Neat.
Yeah.
And there was something else that you read too, wasn't there?
Yes. I also read
an Image
book, Romulus, the story by Brian Hill, art by Nelson Blake II. This just kind of caught my eye. I like reading Image books, and if I can find a number one that looks interesting, I'll pick it up.
Sure.
And this, I really like this book. It's about, like, so there's like this... there's this order, ancient order of Romulus, and they've trained these largely women, or maybe all women, who they like kind of turn into wolves, and they fight for them, and they do all this stuff for them, and they kill for them. And so there is this one girl who it's basically she telling her life story up until this point. Her name is Ashlar, and her mother has trained her, and then it becomes clear that they are the last two of the fighters in this order, and now the ancient order of Romulus is trying to kill them because they're corrupt. And her mother gets killed in the first issue, so that's not really a big spoiler. And so then it's just Ashlar, and she has to save everybody from this like evil world order that has like these other super soldiers that basically take pills and become really super strong.
Okay.
Whereas she was like born with her gift and being able to kind of like turn into a wolf and that sort of thing. So I think it's really well written so far. I like the way it's paced, even though it tells you a lot in the first issue because it starts from when she was born,
right,
up into present day where she's like about 18 or 19, 17, something like that. I think it does it well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I took a look at it too, and I would say that it's like, what if Greg Rucka wrote Elektra,
sure,
instead of Frank Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Like it's very Rucka-esque because it's got, you know, a female protagonist,
right,
who's a badass. There's a secret society sort of order involved. But there's a lot of things that I noticed that were actually literally drawn from like Miller's stuff.
Oh, really?
Like there's this point where she's training at the beginning. She's talking about the different disciplines that she's in. And
yes,
there's like a series of panels. And in each panel, you don't really see her. You just see her hands or her feet sort of doing things like holding a sword or jumping over or something, or...
Right.
Or, you know, shooting a gun or something. And it just reminds me of the different members of the Chaste when Elektra was training with them.
Sure.
I think it was in Elektra Lives Again or something like that. So it's got that kind of vibe, like,
yes,
in my opinion. Like, what if, well, I guess Elektra did turn good, but like, what if, you know, she were part of this cadre of assassins who went bad and so came after you, and then you had to turn around and defend yourself. And
right.
So there's a lot of things that I think are kind of... Yeah, borrowed, maybe lifted from other comics, you know, elements.
Sure.
But yeah, I thought it was pretty neat. I would be interested to see where it goes. I'm not really familiar with Brian Hill. I think Postal is the only thing I can think of that he
yeah.
has done besides this, and I didn't really read that. So, but it's something that I would definitely
I would read
get number
more.
Two.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if number two is good, I get number three.
Exactly.
And so on and so forth.
I like the art as well. It's really sleek.
Yeah.
And very badass. And one of the things I liked about it too is I guess there's this thing that her and her mother used to say, and she's like, if I'm going to die today, might as well not die alone. So in other words, I'm going to take some okay. bad guys with me if I'm going to die today.
Sure.
So.
Okay.
Just gives you a taste of how much of a badass she is.
It's a good day to die.
Yeah.
Okay. Neat. I would say check that out. Also, I read, it doesn't really have like a normal title. I think it's just called Big Trouble in Little China.
Escape from New York.
Or like Meets Escape from New York.
Yeah.
It's by Boom Studios, if you had to guess. And they have separately done John Carpenter comics
sure.
in the past. They've done a Big Trouble one. They've done a Escape from New York one. This one's a little different. It's written by Greg Pak, who's written, I guess, World War Hulk is the first thing I can think of, but some other stuff. And illustrated by Daniel Bayless. And it's a romp. You know, I mean, it's
right.
basically like, how do you get these two guys together? Magic, of course. So the whole shot is that it's like Jack Burton is, you know, rolling along in the old Pork Chop Express, and he gets sucked through this portal to Snake's world.
Sure.
Where, of course, they look alike, and it's uh-huh. posited that they're just sort of alternate universe versions of each other.
Okay.
But they don't like each other, of course.
Of course not.
And then
too much alike.
Wang is there, but in Snake's world, he's like a different guy. Or he just grew up differently or something like that. So
okay.
he has summoned Jack to help with this problem that they've got going on. And they have to team up with Snake and sort of easily defeat the bad guys and stuff like that.
I
would recommend it.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay.
Greg Pak's done some great stuff in the past. He must have familiarity with... I'm not going to just naturally assume that every comics fan or writer is a John Carpenter fan.
But in order to write this, you have to be somewhat familiar with his work.
Right. But what if you didn't know it very well and you got the job and then you just watched two films and went,
yeah.
okay, I think I got it.
Uh-huh.
Because that, I was really looking for, like, first, if you asked me, do you want a Jack Burton comic? Hell no.
Uh-huh.
No, don't. Let's just have the movie. Fine. If John Carpenter wants to do a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China right now with Kurt Russell right now, great, let's see how that looks.
Right.
Get control back in there. Go for it.
Yeah.
But this, I don't know. It just kind of seems like somebody's just kind of doing Jack Burton. Like half of his dialogue is just from
the movie? Film.
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding.
Like, I didn't think that him talking about how the Pillars of Heaven shook is something he does all the time.
Right.
It's just that when he's on the radio in the Pork Chop Express, it's just the sort of stream of consciousness stuff that comes out, you know, when he's probably halfway through a bottle of something pretty
right.
cheap. And not something that is like a personal life. Like his personal life philosophy is like it's being rewritten constantly.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little disappointed about that. Snake is, you know, he's Snake and he's reticent and a badass and he hasn't really got a chance to shine. We're kind of focusing on Burton in this part.
Okay.
And then he's being haunted for some reason by the ghost of Lopan.
Okay. Because why not?
Because why not? And that to me also seems like, hey, remember? That was in the movie?
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
So ultimately, it's going to be, I think, a 6-issue series. We'll have to see where it goes. But I would say, wait and see. Boom absolutely is going to have a shiny-ass collection of this as
mm-hmm.
the day that they're done publishing the last issue. So go flip through that when it comes out in 6 months or so. And if you like that, yeah, pick it up. Otherwise, I mean, like, art's fun, again.
Art is fun.
It's very colorful. And it's not like it really looks like Kurt Russell all that much, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
And the contrast between Jack Burton and Snake is Snake Plissken is good, and so yeah, only for super fans.
Okay, there you go.
Of Greg Pak or Daniel Bayless.
I thought you were going to say Carpenter.
Well, I am a Carpenter super fan.
I know.
I said maybe don't get it. So
okay, all right.
So I don't know. We'll see. Let that one run. Let the clock run out on that one and see what happens. I want to talk real quick about Titanfall 2. Titanfall 2 is by Respawn Entertainment. It's published by Electronic Arts. It is, like I said before, it is a first-person shooter. The twist on it, though, is that you are what's called a pilot. And you're a pilot because you pilot a Titan, which is a giant mecha, like a 20-foot-tall robot, essentially.
Sure.
Think Robotech, that kind of thing. And the other cool thing is that it's It came out during a time when parkour was so hot. Hot enough that it was in Punisher Warzone.
Yeah.
And it was everywhere.
It was everywhere.
And that element has been added to this game. As a pilot, you have something called a jump pack, which allows you to make these rocket-boosted jumps. And you also can run on the walls. So there'd be these very... it's all like urban environments. And the story... I must have played 400 hours of the first game. I couldn't tell you what the story is.
Okay.
Here's why. There's no first person... there's no single player in the first game. It is all multiplayer.
Yeah.
And so that's all it is. But it's essentially set in the far future where humanity has left Earth and has established many colonies in other places. And then now you get that sort of, this colony is fighting against that guy. There's the evil conglomeration that, you know, fighting against the scrappy rebels who just want to be free.
Of course.
It's that sort of thing. It's like the militia versus the IMC. I don't even know what IMC stands for. I know they're the bad guys, though. And so you're essentially just playing like this militia guy. You're the ragtag people who are fighting for freedom against this intergalactic empire.
Okay.
And the cool thing is that it all takes place. It is a beautiful game. Like the first game, beautiful. It takes place in these wonderful sort of half urban, half crazy alien planet environments.
Okay.
So you'll be fighting like a ruined town, or you'll be fighting in like a factory, but you know, you're defending this factory because the militia needs it to keep making war supplies against the IMC,
sure,
which is invading. And you got this sense of like a really great cyberpunk novel that you just weren't, you were just in the action sequences of.
Sure.
And it was really good at sort of keeping that sort of world going. Well, the twist on this, oh, and the reason I mentioned all that is because there are many vertical surfaces, and as a pilot, there is advantages to being high, up high or down low. And so you can run around, but you can like run on the wall like Neo, and then you can like rocket jump off of that and run on another wall. And for, I never really mastered that, but you can watch other players go on these insane kill streaks where they're just, they don't touch the ground for like 2 minutes.
That's crazy.
And are just killing people. And then you'd like go through a window, psh, break in, you're inside the house, kill everybody in the house, jump out. Your robot grabs you as you come out of the window, stuffs you in his chest, and now you're in a giant robot and you're blowing everybody away. It's pretty amazing.
That's really cool.
Well, the second game adds a first player campaign.
Okay.
And that's what I'm going to be reviewing here.
Okay.
Skip to the end of the review. Here's why I'm not talking about the multiplayer. You need PS Plus to play it.
Why do they do that?
I don't know. Guess what? You don't need that. You don't need that on PC. So my recommendation is get it on PC.
Oh my gosh.
I have a PlayStation 4 review copy, but I don't currently have a PS Plus membership, and I wasn't interested in getting one to review the multiplayer. So I'm only reviewing the single player. That's fine. It is the unique part of this game. It's okay. There aren't a lot of tweaks to the gameplay for the second one. There's a new mechs have been introduced. There's only 3 mechs in the first game. There's like 6 now. You can do melee combat. The mechs could always punch each other before. Now they've added like a sword and some like melee weapons.
Okay.
Which people asked for. I'm not sure it was ever necessary though. And I have noticed that with the melee, or sorry, the mech combat, they have kind of changed. Every mech had sort of a special weapon system. You had your gun, you could punch things. And then you had a couple different side weapons, and you had like a weapon that could charge up like a rocket pack or shooting like a big missile at somebody or doing something like that. They've kept that in this, but they all have a very sort of Street Fighter-esque special move feel to them now.
Okay.
Something I liked about the first game was there were some weapons that were good. There were some that were bad. There were some that could be exploited by good players, you know, in a good way, but it never felt like somebody had really gone in and went, well, this has to be the very special thing for this. Like, look out when this guy does this.
Right, because then like you're going to need this weapon.
Yeah, or maybe you can't just run away. You can't avoid this super attack.
Okay.
A bad player in the first game could make a bad mech, or sorry, a good player can make a bad mech run well.
Sure.
Like, I used to just set the weapons on random because everybody has their special ones that they like, and I would take random ones that I don't use often to get used to them.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still some that, like, why would I use the mind gun? It's no good. Like, it never hits anybody.
Sure.
But this has a very more sanitized kind of feel to it. It doesn't matter in the first person campaign, which is very linear, and I still don't really understand the conflict. You play as this...
Maybe it's not important.
...young officer named Jack Cooper, who's just a rifleman. He's not even a pilot. And he gets thrust into the situation where he has to take the mantle of a pilot and sort of learn as he goes. And in the first game, you got the idea that the mechs had AI in that you could tell your mech, follow me if you're not inside of it, or, like, kill anything that moves while I run off and do this. Because you could get out of your mech, and that was part of the gameplay as well. Sometimes you have to run around without it. In this, the mech has like a cute personality, which was never a part of the first game. And so as you go through the game and you're learning to use the mech is telling you things. It's kind of educating you as well.
Okay.
Which I don't like.
Okay.
I always liked this because I liked the, like I said, the bleak world of this future where humans are killing each other by the millions in some unnamed solar system. Just, you know, because war never changes, that sort of thing.
Okay.
But now it's like, you have a destiny, son, and your robot is cute. And you guys are going to tell each other jokes. And then they introduce time travel.
Oh,
which
no.
Which is a sign that you don't have any ideas.
Yep.
So right now, I would say if you like the first one, get it. If you don't have PS Plus, think about getting it on a PC if you've got that option. If you don't, definitely wait for a used copy or, you know, give yourself an out.
Okay.
You get a used copy from GameStop, you don't like it, you can take it back.
Sure.
No questions asked. Otherwise, though, it continues to look great. They used a modified version of the Source Engine, I think, for this, and it looks even better than the first game.
Hmm.
It's getting crazy scores. Everybody's paid off. All the checks went out. So it's 9, 9.5s, and 10s all across the board.
Ooh.
Of course. The PC is actually the worst rated.
Really?
Might be because of some bugs or something like that. Like I said, I haven't tried it on a PC. I will get it on a PC eventually.
Yeah, because then you
it's
can
Titanfall
do
2.
Yeah.
Here's the recommendation. If you have, are still listening at the end of this and you even know what I'm talking about, you either have it or want it. So just get it.
Yeah.
But if you've never heard of it, this isn't the time to pick it up.
Okay.
Hey, if the next Call of Duty game is set in Jamaica, it would be called Call of Duddy.
What?
Hey, yo, Sean. You, Mr. Kingston.
Well, I think we need to come clean.
About what?
Neither of us are Buffy fans or have really extensively even seen the television show Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay, well, you're right about
that.
So
now that everybody's turned off the podcast, not for any good reason.
Things I do want to watch
slip through
it.
The cracks.
Yeah.
They have to.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just for me. This is just something that fell through the cracks. Maybe because of this film? Maybe not.
I've seen this movie before, and I remember
I saw this movie when it came out.
Uh-huh.
Remembered that I kind of liked it.
Yeah.
Definitely saw it a couple more times on video.
Right.
And then, yeah, I just
I
never watched
I
the show.
I remembered liking it, too.
I never watched the show.
I never really did either.
Yeah.
I hear everybody talk about the musical one, like
so
it's the best one.
This is a perfect review because you know that we're going to be unbiased because we're not like buff heads.
Sure.
Buff tards.
I don't think it's that last one.
We're not, you know, biased against it because it's not TV show, man.
Right.
It's awesome. Did you see the episode where they sing? Oh, this is so
good.
Right,
exactly.
That's not what's going to happen here.
No.
We're going to tell you with clear minds that this movie's a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. All right, so anyway, it is Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the film. It has a 35% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Came out in 1992. It is, of course, Joss Whedon's like first film, really.
Yeah.
It made $60 million on a budget of $7 million. As far as $7 million, every cent of that is on the screen.
Yep.
There's.
I would agree with that.
What do you think the most expensive thing in this movie would have been? Anything with flying.
Anything with flying.
There's that scene where they have the showdown in like the parade float storage. But you could probably shoot that on location.
You probably could.
At a parade float place.
But you'd probably have to get permission to be okay with like wrecking some of the floats. Or, you know what I mean?
They don't wreck anything.
Well,
you have to be okay with Rutger Hauer sitting on one.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yeah, and this movie tells the story, if you didn't know, of Buffy Summers, who is a high school senior in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to stop comparing them because we're doing the movie.
Yes.
She is, did we have the phrase mean girl before Mean Girls?
Yeah, I think
doesn't matter, really. She's a mean girl.
Yeah, she's like a popular head of the cheerleading squad.
Yep, and she's got all the rich, snooty friends you'd expect.
And they talk in this language that is like Valley Girl, but it's really, I have to say, the first 10, 15 minutes of this film before things really get rolling are really hard to watch.
Well, what's your sitch?
Stop. Exactly. I mean, they're speaking in a different language, and it's annoying as hell. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
That's de rigueur for films like this, though.
Yeah, I know.
We've done a lot of high school movies, haven't we, now that I think about it? Like, how does this compare to Teen Wolf? Nobody in Teen Wolf was speaking in some teen patois.
No.
So is that like a thing that you have to do for girl movies? Everything's got to be fetch?
Stop it. No, I don't think it does.
And but it seems to be that way. I think if you made a high school movie, you would be castigated if you didn't have them talking in some
heavy incredibly
teen lingo,
okay,
man.
Okay, but listen to me, Cal. Like, this is incredibly insidious, it's really, really annoying. Now, yes, I mean, there are catchphrases in other teen movies geared towards girls, like Mean Girls and Clueless, but I don't think that they're annoying like this.
Oh, boy.
This is just, like, super, super hard to watch, yeah. And you just, like, why should I care about these people? And you wanna almost turn it off before it even starts, which is a really bad way to start a film.
What's your damage?
Stop it.
Teen lingo. Don't get me started on Empire Records. So Buffy is approached by a man named Donald Sutherland, but his character's name is Merrick.
Yes.
And he tells her that she is a slayer, mm-hmm, and that he is there to train her and to bring her into her birthright, which is the ability to kill vampires.
Yep.
She has heightened strength and abilities, which are for killing vampires.
Uh-huh.
She doesn't believe him at first. He takes her to a graveyard where some vampires attack them, and she kills them and realizes that he's right.
Mm-hmm.
And that the city has a problem. It is
an infestation, if you will.
Yeah. I don't think the town is ever named. It's not like this is Sunnyvale or something like that.
No, I don't think it's
Hemery High School, and I think it's actually supposed to be in LA, maybe? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Or some suburb of LA.
Yes.
West Covina. I don't know. And so they're in trouble, though. Vampires are taking over the town for some reason. They're coming out of nowhere. And so she has to deal with that. Also in this film is Luke Perry.
Yep.
As Pike, and David Arquette as his friend Benny.
Mm-hmm.
And why aren't they in this? I have no idea. Simply to give Buffy a love interest.
Mm-hmm.
When it probably would have been cool and stronger if she just didn't have a love interest.
It's a teen movie. Yeah.
Another one.
Yep.
And so David Arquette's character Benny gets bitten by a vampire.
Really early
named
on.
Amlyn, played by Paul Reubens.
Yep.
The diamond in the rough of this film. The
oh my God.
Absolute best part of this film.
I would agree.
And he...
with his crazy hair.
He's going around. Yeah, right. He's going around. The whole point of being a vampire is like to be cool and
like
to take the best of every era with you. You know, like be either stylish or be
really
stylish
cool.
In a retro sort of way. Retro. Put your collar up. And yeah, he's just a mess.
He really is.
And I think Lothos, played by Rutger Hauer, his boss, really hates him.
I know.
But he has kept him around for some reason. And that's a funny dynamic.
It's a great dynamic.
That's not really explored very much. And so, things go on. Buffy has to juggle her life as a high school popular girl with her life of training and fighting vampires. Of course, mm-hmm, that doesn't work out real well. And it seems like her group was already kind of going south on her. Her group of mean girls led... or at least containing Hilary Swank.
Yes.
Wow.
Which is like, wow.
Yeah. There's a lot. There are a lot of people in this film that you would not expect.
Yeah. And a lot of them are uncredited.
Yeah. Ben Affleck's in this movie.
He's basketball player number 10.
Yeah. Ricky Lake and Seth Green are in this film.
Yeah.
Tom Jane is in this film.
Yep.
Or should I say Tom Janes?
I know.
Just so weird.
Drop the S. Good choice.
Stephen Root is in this film movie.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't have been that old back then. He probably was in his mid-30s, right?
Probably.
He's been playing that same character his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Just sometimes with Coke bottles and my stapler. And so they all play exactly what you'd think. The stereotypical high school characters. You know, the overbearing administrator.
We saw in Teen Wolf as
well. Well, yeah, it's in all these movies.
Yeah.
And then, Natasha Gregson-Wagner's in this too.
Yes.
She's so cute. And she's so young, too.
Uh-huh.
And she doesn't ever really come back. Like,
well,
she plays
she
like the
killed.
Nice little... Yeah, but everybody who gets killed becomes a vampire again, right?
I think they just kind of destroyed her.
Oh.
I kind of got the idea that...
Maybe she had to leave the film or something.
I don't know. I just kind of got the idea that it was time to feed and they were not very gentle with her. And then she... was destroyed so much.
Yeah, as far as the rules of vampirism go.
Not really explained.
No. Well, I was thinking about it. So one thing that they don't do is they don't try to flip the script all that much. Mm-hmm. Every vampire movie, it seems like, comes in and they want to flip the script and like, oh, guess what? you know, crosses don't work. I mean, a cross doesn't really work in this film, but that's not really the point. Or like everything you heard is a lie. Forget about all that bullshit. You right. got to do this and this and this. It's pretty much just, you know, vampires. Here they are. It's vampires.
Right. Like, you have to invite them in. But it's not really clear. And I don't know, maybe you know this, Cal. I mean, is that just your home or is that everywhere? Because they seem to come into the school without a problem.
Well, it leads to like one of the only good jokes in the film, which is the vampires want to get into the high school dance at the end. And they're like, don't invite them in. And she's like, well, I already invited them. They're seniors. It's like the senior dance.
So, yeah.
Okay, not that good, I guess. Not that good. Yeah, this movie is kind of like if Pamela from Teen Wolf was the hero of the movie and not Scott.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went off in a different direction.
Yeah, but Buffy, she
Which
does
Which, you got to give it to Joss Whedon.
Change.
Is a good idea.
Yeah.
Or, I guess, is a good idea for a movie
mm-hmm.
or a show.
Right. Well, and then, you know, Joss has gone on record to say that he wasn't really happy with, they made changes to the script.
Yeah, but also, I don't blame him because first time writer, you're probably going to get, your stuff's not going to get
done the way you want it to.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So like Jeff Loeb, first time writer, Teen Wolf, the movie cost $1 million.
Yeah.
And they didn't even want to make it. So I think he got to, it wasn't just, here's the script. Okay. Tell me how it goes. He got to be there. He got to what they needed, something new, as they often they do on a set. They'll have
right.
the writer there and
this
he
isn't
got
working.
To give a lot of input. Yeah.
Right.
And I think Joss Whedon, a lot of his input got overridden. The lady who directed it, though, Fran Rubel-Kuzai.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't heard that name before, have you?
No.
She hasn't really directed all that much film-wise. She did Buffy. She helped him produce it and get the financing together.
Okay.
It was originally being produced by Sand Dollar Films, Dolly Parton's
yes.
production company.
Yes.
Which is like, what?
Yeah, I know.
I don't think it's very well directed.
It's kind of all over the place.
Yeah. There are a lot. Look, the script is not great. We've talked about the sort of teen lingo and stuff like that. And there are so many moments that if they had been directed and shot the right way, would have been funny.
Yes.
Or at least funnier.
Yeah.
Here's a compliment I didn't expect to give. David Arquette does okay in this film.
Yeah, I think
he's,
he does.
He's like really trying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that he's made some strong choices about Benny's character.
Mm-hmm.
And so, whereas Luke Perry
is just being
is
Luke
just
kind of
Luke Perrying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm not sure how much this is written down, like their scenes together are scripted or how much they're just kind of messing around. But they have this kind of back and forth. That's this kind of sardonic sort of, you know, witty repartee that they have.
Right.
And it's just shot like, well, it's just one long shot. They're walking on this thing. And David Arquette's trying to give like these sort of funny sort of readings for the lines or like accentuate it. And it's kind of not working because we're all we see is, you know, Luke Perry just looking bored, like walking down a thing. And then he's got some really funny things, like when he eats a hot dog bun, there's no hot dog in it.
Whoa.
And then the line that could have been really great that he kind of screws up is like, the guy's like, oh, I'm immortal. And he's like, now you're a coat rack.
And right. He didn't deliver it that well.
Yeah, he over-delivers it. And so, but like a cutaway or like, you know, giving him like a different sort of shot to do that in would have made it better.
Do you notice he doesn't really do a whole lot anymore? Like, he was really hot for a while because good looking guy, but
he's still a good looking guy.
Yeah,
they actually, so there has been rumors flying around about a remake of this.
I heard that
for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're pretty much dead now, but they got real hot around 2010 or 2011.
Okay.
And so he was back sort of in the news, or I think he was doing like a Hallmark Channel movie, so we won't talk about where he is
God.
Right now. And they asked him about it, and he's like, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I don't know why he would be in it. There's no way
no,
he'd be in it.
I don't know. Well, it's kind of interesting. You go on his IMDb page. I mean, he's still working. But
oh, sure.
But things that he's known for, Buffy is one of them, and 90210 is one of them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not...
Well, that's why we picked this film.
Peak.
People remember this film.
Yes.
But they don't necessarily remember it well.
Right.
Donald Sutherland will do just about anything.
Oh.
Or at least 90s Donald Sutherland would do just about anything.
Yeah.
And sometimes you get, like, an outbreak, which is kind of fun. And sometimes you get this.
Well, I mean, look.
But what's cool about Donald Sutherland
is doing
that
all the...
he has also definitely made some choices. He could have just come in and went, I'm Donald Sutherland. I'm kind of creepy.
Right.
And I talk like this.
Right.
And he made some choices about this guy.
Yeah.
Which I thought were really neat. Like, he plays this guy who, I guess, is immortal. Like, he's just been alive for all these years.
That wasn't clear to me.
Or it seems like he...
Or he's like reborn.
Yeah, he's like reincarnated and yes. becomes this guy over and over again, which is neat. But it's clear that he... This is all he does. So he has no social skills.
Nope.
And he has to go and talk to like a teenage girl.
Yep.
And convince her, which is weird. But it's almost like he knows that it's weird. And there's times that she is completely comfortable telling anybody what she thinks. Mm-hmm. So when she's given him the business about like how this is stupid and really I have to get cramps, that's my superpower.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like almost kind of shrinking away and kind of like really apologetic about the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you see and you kind of see him slowly kind of warm up to her and kind of come out of his shell. And it seems like having this connection to her is good for him.
Right.
It's just a person. And we never see really, we see a couple flashes of Christy Swanson in a bad wig in the yes. past. But we never get any backstory really on what the deal is with the other Slayers. Are they, they've all died.
Yes.
I mean, clearly.
Yes.
But did they, were they all killed by vampires? Did they become vampires? Is every failed Slayer like a vampire somewhere?
Well, it's almost kind of insinuated.
That might be a thing we could yeah. look into. And then he actually confronts Lothos when Lothos, you know, hypnotizes her because he's got this power over Buffy because she's his chosen one or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost get like a hint of collusion almost. He's almost saying like, you know, don't take this one.
Yeah.
Like maybe he's fed Lothos ones in the past.
It's not clear.
No.
Yeah, I know.
And then he gets killed with a weird dagger and it doesn't matter. He's out of the movie.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad. It's kind of sad.
It's just, it's wasted potential.
It is.
And I have to wonder if there was more there that Joss Whedon had written or thought about. Because once he did the show, I'm assuming,
mm-hmm.
I know that he rewrote the whole mythology. But I kind of wonder what his idea was, if he had an underlying idea about those things that wasn't going to be in this film.
Right.
Well, but might have been part of a franchise.
I read something that, you know, one of the differences is that... Merrick was a what became known in the series, a watcher.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was never said in the movie. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's almost too complex to really get into in the movie, but it seemed like...
Well, it's certainly the people who produced the movie weren't interested in that. They weren't going to... Whether he had it or not, it wasn't going to make it on the screen.
Well, I know. And it's a little frustrating. And
86 minutes, I think you had time to go into some of that stuff.
Yeah. One thing about Merrick too, I don't know how you feel about this, but he never takes off his trench coat or his hat.
No.
Not once. And he's inside and he won't take it off.
He's
at his
home.
He's
in a girl's locker room. And yeah.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on that.
Yeah. yeah. You get your training montage, which of course is necessary, set to a song I've never heard before.
No.
What is it with these movies? I know they're cheap. Is that the answer?
I think that's the answer.
They're taking place in, like, one takes place in 1985. This takes place in the early 90s. Boy, no good music at any of those times.
Yeah, no. Ooh.
Like, what the heck?
Yeah, I don't know. And also, like, the training montage. Like, she just kills some vampires, like, in the graveyard. And then the next thing you know, we're doing training montage.
Yeah, if
like,
she can catch like, a knife like there that was you like throw at her head, like how much does she need to train?
Yeah, I feel like there was some like transition that was kind of missing there. It was like kind of like jarring. I was like, wait, what?
We definitely need to get now? A gymnast who about the same build and size as Christy Swanson and then have her just go nuts.
Yep, pretty much. Exactly. Yep, that is exactly what happened. So.
Yeah, there's a couple scenes that are like really badly framed too. I think it's the scene where Buffy saves Pike from when Amblin is trying to... He loses his arm. He's trying to...
Yes.
Which, remember, comedy film. This comedy almost becomes like a kind of scary, bloody film.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost becomes like a really funny comedy.
Yes.
And I think if they... Usually you'd say, we'll do one or the other. I think if they had pushed... It didn't do either of them enough.
No.
You pushed both of those things more. But you got that scene where, of course, he... Most ineffectual vampire ever. He punches through the roof of the van.
Yes.
And then he's kind of like just flapping his arm around.
And you're Pike's a little like, terrified of
not
Pike
even like
for Pike.
Being threatened. He's just like, stop doing that. Then, of course, he crashes through the thing. They're going to kill him. Buffy saves him, takes him back to the house. And it's the whole thing where there's this tension, I guess, because we know that we're supposed to feel that, but we don't because there's no chemistry between the leads. And she's like talking to him. She's like, there's a strange man in my apartment. He's like, you're saying I'm a man? He's not even... Like in frame, like if the top of his head is cut off. I don't know if it was something in the copy that we watched.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. But I do like how he's called Lefty pretty much after that.
Yeah.
And how Lofos like says, like gives him a really, really, really hard time about it. And then he's like, I don't know how you survived the Crusades.
Yeah. Right.
And it's like, I'm almost wondering like, oh, so he's a vampire. Does he have like super healing powers? Is his arm going to grow back? Nope. Not going to grow back.
Apparently not.
Nope. Mm-mm.
It's going to make him less effective when he gets killed by her later.
Yeah, exactly. In perhaps one of the best scenes of the movie. Definitely one of the funniest. His ongoing death scene.
I think that's the only reason that I ever thought of that film positively. And I would continue to do that for the rest of my high school career to the point where everybody was tired of it after a while. But just the...
just goes on way too long. But it's great.
Then he stops, looks at her, goes back.
And he eventually collapses, but then like once the credits roll, we see him doing it again.
Yeah. And that's genuinely funny and something that just a talented, funny guy thought would be a good addition to what's going on. And it's not one of the lame lines that they wrote for the film.
No.
Or just like, oh, wait, Luke's got an idea, everybody. Right. He's going to eat a hot dog. He's got no hot dog in the bun. Yeah. More of him, please. What if he... No, I like Rutger Hauer. He's another guy that'll do just about anything. But he's great in this. What if there's no Rutger Hauer? Pee-wee is the main vampire, and we just expand his part.
Sure.
So he is the...
He's ineffectual.
Deadly, yeah, but sort of bumbling villain. Uh-huh. He is the Woody Allen in Casino Royale,
right,
for example.
Sure.
What about that?
I think that would have been more interesting. It would have made the film funnier, that's for sure.
Yeah, give him more to do.
Yeah.
I read a thing with, it was like an Onion interview with Joss Whedon from like 2001.
Okay.
Which proves that you can find anything. The Dead Sea Scrolls are online these days. They literally are. And he said that somebody asked, like, what was it like working with Paul Reubens? And he was like, after making a joke about it, because, you know, he's a goofy guy. He's like, he was great. You know, he was always there. He was super professional. And he was a guy too, that when we were stuck on something or it's like, well, this bit's like, I guess he'd be like, ooh, can we do this? You know, or like, ooh, I was reading your line and I thought it looks pretty good, but like, do you mind if I do this? Is that okay? And he's like, what actor does that?
Yeah. No,
they either just read it or they just do their own thing and don't even ask you. So
right.
Nothing but good things to say. Luke Perry. I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. I'd imagine Luke Perry would not be very good to work with in that era.
He's probably pretty full of himself.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of guessing.
Me too.
When he walked into the school dance and he had his vest and leather jacket on, I was like, that is a very Luke Perry look. A la 90210. Yeah.
Yeah, the no tie, like bow or otherwise, just like the pearl stud, mm-hmm. you know, in the starch collar.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Or bolo.
There you go.
And there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Got it from structure.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Michael J. Fox of this movie.
Okay.
Christy Swanson.
Yes.
Better movie. Deserved a better movie.
Yeah.
Pretty much carries it herself.
I think she does.
I have seen her in other stuff, but it's never been good. I've never seen her in anything that I would call good, really.
Yeah.
But she was really big right around this time, did a couple movies, and then that was kind of it. I mean, she's still around today. I think she's on TV, but she's probably 22 when they made this film.
She's really young.
And she's great. And I don't think that she's somebody who has a ton of range, but I think she got this part like right away.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe one of the reasons... Uh-oh, careful. Audience... Plug your ears. I think maybe one of the reasons that I didn't get that excited about Buffy is because, like, I didn't... Sarah Michelle is kind of flat to me.
Ooh.
Well, hold on. Like, okay. I know you watch somebody on a show, you get to know them, you get to know their personality, and you like them. And so I understand that people really like her. But I saw I Know You Did last summer, and I was probably like, I'm good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think that even some of her biggest fans, I don't think they would necessarily go to the mat with her being like a fantastic actress.
They probably wouldn't want you to say otherwise, but maybe they don't.
In their heart of hearts.
Yes, exactly.
But that's how I feel about Christy Swanson. Like, probably not a super talented thespian, but I feel like she really gets this.
Uh-huh.
Give me those Doritos. What's the sitch?
Yeah. She eats a lot of licorice in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Something I noticed.
That says preppy Valley Girl, I guess.
I guess. I don't know. But I do think that...
She's really hot.
I do think that they do a pretty good job of developing her character, and she changes quite a bit throughout the film. She kind of loses her friends, which is kind of crappy because they're really shallow.
But that never really pays off.
No, it doesn't.
Correctly, because by the time her friends have kind of abandoned her, and she's just too busy killing vampires. She doesn't have any time for it.
No.
You'd have some kind of thing like before the vampires attack the dance where she meets up with them and they either break it off finally or maybe they
reconcile
a little bit. And there's a scene kind of like that, but it just flips over into like, oh, well, now her boyfriend is dating like the dumb one.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Yeah.
So we can make a date rape joke later?
I don't know.
Weird.
It was really
bad
weird.
Bad decisions.
Yeah. And not funny. Date rape tropes? Not funny.
More Tom Jane.
More Tom Jane, yes. Was that in your notes?
Was he wearing shoes?
More Tom Jane. He was. I think he was. He was a mechanic in this. I think it would be hard for him not to wear shoes.
He could pull a mechanic. It'd be worth the pain.
Okay. All right.
Get sparks on your feet.
Hilary Swank played quite the brat in this.
Yes.
She's got like a disgusted look on her face for a good portion of the movie.
Yeah. She played, I like to call it the Anne Hathaway before she becomes a princess.
Yeah.
Role.
I know.
The shut up role. And of course, she went on to great things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I ain't going to eat out my heart anymore. Say the Divinals, probably the most expensive song.
Wow.
On the soundtrack.
Okay.
There is a Matthew Sweet song on the soundtrack, though.
Okay.
Silent City. Not, I think, one of his best.
There's a C+C Music Factory. Q Unique. What?
Is that the C+C Music Factory?
It's Keep It Coming is the song.
But
sorry.
But it's not the C+C Music Factory?
Yeah. The C+C. Why are you making fun of me?
Too bad there's not a Mick Hammer song on the soundtrack.
Jeez.
Maybe it's CNC Music Factory. That probably sounds more. Yeah. All right.
Dang it.
Yes. And Toad also wet the sprocket. So it's the budget soundtrack. Let's put it out of its misery. Recommend?
I would not recommend this film. I think if you are a Joss Whedon fan and you're a completionist, fine, go ahead and see it.
We always say that. You don't have to say that.
I know, but I don't want to be completely negative. I don't think if you've never seen this film before, and I just don't think it's worth your time.
I'd have to agree. Like I said, like Christy Swanson is a ray of sunshine in this.
Yeah.
And she's got other work. Like you can definitely watch the Paul Rubens clips on YouTube.
Yes.
And that's all you really need.
Pretty much.
If you're curious about how this fits into the continuity of the TV series, it doesn't.
No.
Not at all. But Joss Whedon did do a comic book in like 1999 called The Origin, which is an attempt to reconcile this with the TV show.
Okay.
Basically. And of course, not really knowing a lot about the TV show, I don't know if they ever really reference like the film or the events of the film.
I don't think they do a whole lot.
Basically, like, it goes through the events of the film, and then she takes care of Lothos, you know, and like their school burns down, and then she moves to Sunnydale.
Okay.
At the end of the thing.
Okay.
And then we can just start the show from there.
Gotcha. All right.
Fun fact about Christy Swanson, though. She was in Pretty in Pink, and she was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Nice.
Everybody forgets that. And more fun trivia, she dated Alan Thicke when she was 17.
What?
And got engaged to him when she was 19.
No.
So skip it.
You
gotta skip. Yeah. You gotta promise me that you'll skip this film. I don't think we'll have to twist anybody's arm on that.
I don't think so.
And I think that's when he was hosting Animal Crackups, so that's fun.
What?
Don't worry about it.
What is...
And she was in Flowers in the Attic.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I'm glad that she's alive right now. By all rights, that should not be true. But
no.
We love you, Christy. Call me. Well, going from bad movie to bad movie, in this case, we're going to go from strength to strength score. We'll be watching Dungeons and Dragons,
All right.
For our next comic book club segment, the 2000 movie directed by Courtney Solomon. You know Courtney Solomon?
No, I don't.
And starring Justin Whalen.
Okay.
And Jeremy Irons.
Don't forget Mr. Irons.
Yeah. It is basically a, you know, it's a movie version of Dungeons & Dragons. We both play Dungeons & Dragons.
Yes, we do.
So we have a particular opinion on it. We'll be bringing that opinion to bear and probably critically hitting this thing.
Yeah.
For major damage.
I hope so.
Yeah. That's the plan.
3.7 on IMDb.
Yep.
That's pretty bad.
So... we're I think the Fungobats will be ready to go on that one. So if you want to watch us, Vorpal Sword Critical decapitate a film,
yes,
with a bat somehow, yes. Come back and check that out. Dungeons & Dragons next time on Craft of Services. Okay, we're not going to take up any more of your time. We're going to get you out of here on time. So we're going to wrap up for tonight and say goodbye. I want to remind you that we're talking about Doctor Strange, a review of the film Doctor Strange on our next show, and Marvel Premiere issues 9 through 14.
Also Doctor Strange.
Good luck getting your hands on those.
Oh.
Maybe just hear us talk about Doctor Strange. I'm actually sure where you can get these. Electronically, probably. If you want to read ahead, go ahead and do that so you can... read along with us, if you will, on our next Comic Book Club segment. In the meantime, you can find us on social media at Facebook and Twitter. Also, you can find us on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and search for Just Enough Trope, you can find the Just Enough Trope page. While you're there, I wish you'd subscribe. That's the best way to get the show, the way that it comes directly to you, like a sending spell. Don't know.
Yes.
We got to save it. Got to save it.
For
the Dungeons
&
Dragons show. We'll save it for the next time. But yeah, while you're there... inscribe with magical runes a review on our page. I don't think I can stop because we love to hear from the fans how you think we're doing. And give us a rating while you're there, too. We really appreciate it. When we get a good rating from you, we move up in the ranks on iTunes, and then we get to bring more to you, and everybody gets exactly what they want. So give us 5
wooden
cramps.
Stakes. Oh.
5 alert system cramps. No. Why?
I don't know.
There is... Okay, but what was going through Joss Whedon's head? Like, how old was he back then? He was in his mid-20s. He was probably just like, ladies, right? Let me see what I know about ladies. Boobs. Cramps.
Oh my
cramps!
Gosh.
I mean, I can't have her boobs glow. So, is that what it was?
There's
a thrown-off line by Merrick about how vampires represent, like, evil and unnaturalness, and that he doesn't really complete it, but it's like the idea that, like, women are the source of life, you know, and so that
right.
is the anti-power of that. So you
I guess,
respond to it,
but it's not really fully. And then it just seems weird. And
yeah, there's a darker implication. Lothos wants her for some reason. We
right.
assume for the reasons that everybody wants her. And if her womb is sort of crying out, does she have some kind of dark destiny to bear, like the vampire child or something like that? Maybe we got the Keymaster, the Gatekeeper. We have to get these two together.
Oh my, stop it.
Well, I think that would be extremely bad. And
yes.
So in that case, give us 5 stars and we'd appreciate it. Like I said, we'll catch you next time to talk about Doctor Strange the film and Doctor Strange the comic. But until then, we're going to sign off. I'm your host, Caliban.
I'm your co-host, Mikan Hanna.
Keep the geek fires burning.